favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Just wearing a Fwen suit.
He was wearing a suit. A Fwen suit.
A Fwen suit. A Fwenster suit.
By the end of this podcast, I'm like, the galaxy is on. All
right. Yeah, literally, that's what you sound like right now, you sick fuck.
See, that, sick see fuck. That's what the little Fwen said inside the big Fwen before you did. Right? Oh, man, you did the fleshy thing again.
You're going to give her fucking brain cancer.
You got a little Fwen operating the big Fwen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, that guy's a fucking.
Does that
that's
mean,
a sick fuck.
does that mean he's alien royalty?
Oh shit.
Well, he's alien, all right.
It's like illegal alien royalty.
You're not illegal. Shut up.
No, I know I'm not.
God!
I just heard Phil's blood pressure shoot through the roof.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Are you guys ready to get started?
You know, I'm sick and delirious. Let's do it. This will be fun.
Alright, putting my soup down. Alright, everyone. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, the always sick Anthony Fuentes.
Hey, alright. It's like four times a year. It just happens to be a little quick this time.
Four times a month.
Yeah, dude, you're...
Shut up.
Twice, and it's fucking March. And also Phil Acevedo.
Hello.
Eating his
hello.
Veggies.
Yes, yes. Healthy as an ox.
Sure.
Yeah, or a cockroach, I should say.
Oh, man, yeah.
Was that your auntie?
Healthy as a cockroach. That's good.
As you guys could obviously tell from the very, very beginning, because we're going to be shooting back and forth quite a few quotes from this one. We are talking about Men in Black from the year of our Lord, 1997.
Hey, here comes
Men in Black. The good guys dress in black. Remember that.
Remember that.
God. Okay, before we even, like, get into it, I'm gonna go right for the nostalgia grab. Do you guys remember on the VHS of Men in Black how they had the music video playing during the credits for,
yes.
for
oh,
that
yeah.
song? I completely forgot about it until the credits started playing. And I'm like, where's the fucking music video?
Dude, I remember buying the soundtrack. My mom bought it for
yes.
me. Not on CD, dude, on cassette.
Oof. Well, I mean, yeah, again, I just said VHS, which you see, kids, mm-hmm. back in the day.
Yeah.
But, I feel like, yeah, that was still in the, like, the CD days was, like, maybe a year or so after that, because, yeah.
I think it was still going on. I think in the late 90s, we still had CDs, cassettes, and then...
I think when we started being able to buy CDs, though, because I remember the first CD I bought for myself was the Chronic 2001.
Mm. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I was going to say, my first CD was probably 2001, 2002. It was a Hilary Duff CD, for anyone curious.
Oh, but the Chronic 2001 came out in 99.
No, yeah. I know.
Dr. Dre's fucking weird.
I understand. I was just like, you know, I wasn't old enough to buy things.
They're like, Mama, please.
Yeah, I had to ask my mom. No, it was one of the first things I bought with like my own quote unquote money, like from doing chores and shit.
Yeah. Oh. Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We are talking about Men in Black from 1997. Phil, what? Actually, I'll introduce this one. Yeah, I'll introduce this one.
Okay.
Let's kick it off with the old IMDb synopsis.
Agent Webster's going to kick this one off. That's what we're doing, right? Agent W?
Yeah, I was going to say Agent W.
W.
James, an NYC cop, is hired by Agent K of a secret government agency that monitors extraterrestrial life on Earth. Together, they must recover an item that has been stolen by an intergalactic villain.
Cool.
I'm gonna give this a 4.
It's all right.
It makes the movie sound really dumb.
Yeah,
it kind of does.
Yeah.
Where's the heart?
There is none.
There's none. Chat GPT right here.
Right. Yep. This was directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. Sonnenfeld. Written by Ed Solomon, and it's based on the Men in Black comics by Lowell Cunningham.
Cool.
Cunningham.
This is starring Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith, Linda
Fiorentino.
I'm sorry?
Fiorentino.
That. Vincent D'Onofrio and Rip Torn.
We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger around here, dear.
Hey, Kay, get the kid a gun.
Anyway. Go get him, Tiger.
Rip Torn's so fucking funny.
Oh, Rip Torn. Rip Torn's great.
This movie was released on July 2nd, 1997 in the U.S. It had a budget of $90 million, and it made $589.4 million.
Ooh, that was another one of the massive theaters for me.
Oh, you saw this in theaters? Of course you did. Yeah, that makes tracks.
Yep. Same. Yep.
I was two, so. Unfortunately, just... no.
Yeah, this
your
was
first
definitely...
words were, "Here comes the Men in Black," weren't they?
Yeah,
no, my first words were, "NYPD means I will knock your punk ass down."
Okay, I could Little Western say that he lost.
Can you believe that? Oh, man, I can imagine that.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's a good one. All right. Well, let's get into the meat of the episode here.
Yes.
I will try to bring the enthusiasm, but I am a little, again, like I said, ill, but not in the hip-hop way. In the very...
He's sick.
Immunity's not good way. So, I want to believe. I need to tell you something about all your, quote-unquote, UFO knowledge. As of right now, they mean precisely dick. In popular culture and UFO conspiracy theories, Men in Black, MIB, are government agents dressed in black suits who question, interrogate, harass, threaten, allegedly memory wipe, or sometimes even assassinate UFO witnesses to keep them silent about what they've seen. The term is also frequently used to describe mysterious men working for unknown organizations, as well as various branches of government allegedly tasked with protecting secrets or performing other strange activities. Yes, that's where all the misinformation comes from, you fuckers.
Ah, yes, the Men in Black.
Men in Black feature prominently in UFOlogy. Is it UFOlogy?
It's UFOlogy.
UFOlogy, yeah, okay.
It's not UFOlogy. There's not two O's.
UFOlogy.
There.
How about that, huh?
That'd be UFOlogy.
Fugazi. Anyway, so UFO folklore and fan fiction. In the 1950s and 60s, UFOlogists adopted a conspiratorial mindset and began fearing they would be subject to organized intimidation in relation to for discovering, quote unquote, the truth about UFOs. That was just the Italian mob. That was just the Italian mob. They're the ones doing it.
Has to be.
Anyway, yeah, exactly. That's why they're attacking your sandwich shop. In 1947, Harold Dahl claimed a man in a dark suit warned him not to discuss his alleged UFO sighting on Maury Island, where, yes, no one is the father on that island.
No
one person.
I think this is, like, one of the first, like, alleged, like, sightings, quote-unquote, for lack of a better term. Or, yeah, with a Men in Black. So it goes back to, you know, the late
40s. It goes back pretty far. Oh. Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. No, I've been pretty steeped in UFO shit lately, so this is all really fun.
You have?
Yeah. I followed the UFO subreddit, and then now like that rabbit hole went down hard.
Dude, I think right now would be the time to be into UFOs, man. I've also been keeping up with the shit that's been happening right now with on the mainstream media over Congress and shit.
Yeah, all the leaks and shit.
Yeah,
all the
dude,
suppression.
There's a lot going on. Hey. Yeah, right now would be the time to get into UFOs.
It's a running bit. I keep seeing comedians talk about it. And she's like, 2020 was so crazy. They announced aliens existed and no one gave a fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also like election year, you know. So I think they're like, let's just wait till whoever's next. Yeah.
So UFOs are a hot topic. I am a one topic voter, and it is UFOs.
No, they're like, yeah, UFOs are real. Okay, remember the banks? We're taking more of their rights. Don't worry, we're taking more of their rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a unidentified single issue.
Yes. All right, well, speaking of, Magullo McCarthy era here. In the mid-1950s, ufologist Albert K. Bender claimed he was visited by men in dark suits who threatened and warned him not to continue investigating UFOs.
If you say that again, I'm driving to your house and I'm kicking you in the face.
Can you bring me soup when you do that, please?
Sure. Bring you some dayquil.
Hey, there you go. See, she knows what's up. He maintained that the men were secret government agents tasked with suppressing evidence of UFOs. I almost did it again. Ufologist John Keel claimed to have had encounters with men in black and referred to them as, quote-unquote, demonic supernaturals with, quote, dark skin and or exotic facial features.
So I pulled some of this from memory from last podcast on the left. Did a 3-part series on Men in Black, and John Keel is a very prominent figure in that story. But when they talked about this, or John Keel talked about this, they kind of had, like, they were just like, I think this man just saw, like, a brown person for the first time.
That's funny. And they're playing these weird sounds, and I don't know. It said, fuck the police. Came out of this giant box.
So now they're time travelers? They're brown time travelers from the 90s? Is that what?
I guess so.
Yeah, right? Although it's so interesting because, let's say, like, the demonic thing. I don't know. It gets more UFO me going off the deep end there.
That's more like coast to coast-esque shit.
Well, because there was this alleged leak or whatever thing that came from somebody that, like, a lot of the suppression early on in the days was because some figures in higher up were just, like, they felt it was... There was, like, a religious angle, like there were demons of some kind, and they didn't want to pursue it further. And I was like, what a bunch of assholes. Yeah, it was very interesting. But anyways, but Keel has argued that some Men in Black encounters could be explained as entirely mundane events perpetuated through, you guessed it, folklore. Yeah.
Ooh. Now,
in his 1975 book, The Mothman Prophecies. Oh, yeah, we got to cover that Richard Gere thing.
That's a good thing. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that movie. Oof. I have history with that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Me too. Early DVD, for sure.
It was an early streaming thing for me, and I thought, because I love Mothman. I've always loved the Mothman. It's always been, like, one of my favorite cryptids, and I remember seeing this movie, and I'm like, The Mothman Prophecies? This must be interesting, and it was not.
Yeah. Where's the gerbil? No. Anyways, he describes a late night outing in 1967 where he himself was taken for Men in Black while searching for a phone to call a tow truck. According to ufologist Jerome Clark, reports of Men in Black represent quote-unquote experiences that don't seem to have occurred in the world of conscious reality. Oh, consensus. Shit. Huh? Consensus reality. Never mind. Botched that one a little bit, eh?
Okay, that's okay. So, honestly, I was expecting you to fuck it up earlier because you're sick, so.
Hey, there we go. My consensus is not good right now either. Hey. Fucking. Oh, the sick delirium. Anyways, famously, Men in Black speak in a jilted tone. They lack any kind of social awareness, often saying things bluntly and very matter-of-factly, which is absolutely none of us here. We are fluffy.
We are neither blunt nor matter-of-factly.
Yeah, not even really direct, to be honest with you.
That entire line you just read, that is Tommy Lee Jones's Instagram bio right there.
Oh, absolutely. That's...
But, jilted tone, lack of any kind of social awareness, often saying things bluntly and matter-of-factly. How do you know my name?
I swear him and Harrison Ford have the same agent, you know? Just fucking.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yes, right. All right. And his article, Gray Barker, my friend, the myth maker. John C. Sherwood claims that in the late 1960s, at age 18, he cooperated. When Gary Barker urged him to develop a hoax, which Barker subsequently published, about what Barker called black men.
Don't ask.
Okay.
I am just retelling what I have found on the internet.
That's funny. Three mysterious UFO inhabitants who silenced Sherwood's pseudonymous identity. Dr. Richard H. Pratt. Okay. I got through it, guys. We did it. Yay.
There you go.
That was...
Give me the memory wipe. Give me the memory wipe. I'm good. I can do it. Anyways. So, it is...
Is it?
So, is it all a prank that snowballed into a huge conspiracy? It's a shade of gray. The modern concept of Men in Black definitely came out of a UFO nerd spending too much time in Point Pleasant in the 1960s. But also, the concept has existed long before. That's right. Mm-hmm. Hey, I love learning about this shit. This is nice.
That is the, like, primer of Men in Black lore. Again, I cannot recommend it enough, but the three-part series on the Men in Black by Last Podcast on the Left is phenomenal. Also, the Mothman.
I gotta re-listen to both of those because they were pretty good, if I remember correctly.
They talk about Mothman in the episode. So if you like Mothman, you're gonna like the episodes.
What if you like Richard Gere? Will you also like the episodes?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's no gerbil talk, so I don't know.
Eh, I could skip them.
Oh man. Interesting. All right, is it? It looks like it's me. It looks like I'm up to bat.
It is.
I'm ready? You're up to bat. All right, Bill.
Cool. Series 4, de-animizer, Noisy Cricket. I am the little Noisy Cricket here. Here we go. You know, I might be a short king, but I pack a heavy punch.
Hell yeah!
All right, here we go. All right. Anyways, E.T. Phone Home.
You guys see what I'm doing there with my titles?
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. I like it.
Gotcha. All right, here we go. So, the film is loosely based on Lowell Cunningham's and Sandy Carruthers' comic book, The Men in Black. I'm pretty sure I butchered that person's last name.
Carruthers.
Anyways, Carruthers. Producers Walter F. Parks and Laurie MacDonald optioned the rights to The Men in Black in 1992 and hired Ed Solomon to write a, quote, very faithful script. Beautiful. Parks and MacDonald wanted Barry Sonnenfeld as director because he had directed both The Addams Family and its sequel, Addams Family Values.
Which we will cover one day.
Oh my God. We totally should. More Christina Ricci for me. I'm down.
Cool. Yeah, dude, she was 9 in that movie. Sicko.
What?
Yeah.
There's other later Christina Ricci. Fuck.
However...
You fucking sicko. You're sick.
Man. However, Sonnenfeld was attached to a different film at the time, so they instead approached Miracle on 34th Street director Les Mayfield. Mayfield was briefly attached before it fell through. John Landis and Quentin Tarantino were asked to direct, but each, wouldn't you know it, turned their asses down.
Oh my God, dude. Fucking nobody would have been safe with John Landis behind this fucking thing.
Oof, gosh. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking Quentin Tarantino. That would have been crazy.
John Landis, but can we get real lasers? Can we get real lasers?
Can we get a real Noisy Cricket?
Yeah.
Anyways, as a result, Men in Black was delayed, allowing Sonnenfeld to make it his next project after he finished his most recent film. Much of the initial script drafts were set underground, with locations ranging from Kansas to Washington, D.C. and Nevada. Sonnenfeld decided to change the location to New York City. New York City! Because the director felt New Yorkers would be tolerant of aliens who behave oddly while disguised, terming the movie as, quote, the French Connection with aliens, or like Casablanca, but with no Nazis. I like what you did there. That's really cool. Nice. Guys, did you know, I recently watched The French Connection for the very first time like a year ago. Have you guys ever seen The French Connection?
I have not.
No, I have not. Oh my
God, dude. It's a magnificent movie. It's from the 70s, dude. Wait, you've seen The Chase, but you haven't seen the movie?
Yeah, we saw it in film class.
Watch the movie. Film
class. What do you want to fucking do?
Watch the rest of the movie? Anyways. Yeah,
but I saw The Chase.
Anyways. Phil. Yes. What's up?
Turn your gain down a little.
Okay.
You're getting too hot about The French Connection, Phil.
Okay, there we go. How about that?
We're good.
I think we're good. All right, anyways. He also felt much of the city's structure resembled flying saucers and rocket ships. One of the locations Sonnenfeld thought perfect for the movie was a giant ventilation structure for the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, which became the outside of the MIB headquarters.
This is such good instinct. Like, it looks so fucking cool in the movie. I remember thinking it was the weirdest building I'd ever seen in my life when I was a kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You walk in and it's like these two big like propellers are going against each other. The security guard has like the worst job in the world right there, but he's just sitting there. God.
Especially considering what happens to him in the second movie.
Uh-huh. All right. So when it came to casting Agent K, the studio wanted Clint Eastwood for the part. While Tommy Lee Jones only accepted the role after Steven Spielberg promised the script would improve based on his respect for Spielberg's track record. He had been disappointed with the first draft, which he reportedly said, stank, feeling it did not capture the tone of the comic. Wow.
I'm just impressed that he read the comics.
That's so cool. All right, Mr. Jones.
Yeah. I know. Dude, I mean, this is 90s Tommy Lee Jones. He was doing some wacky shit right there, dude. He already did Two-Face and Batman Forever. And,
that's also coming up in a moment.
Oh my goodness. Speaking of Tommy Lee Jones, oh my God, have you guys watched Blown Away?
No.
With him and Jeff Bridges. Came out like in 94. Another wacky Tommy Lee Jones role. He was like an Irish bomb terrorist in Boston. It's fucking amazing.
What? For such a severe looking man, he does some wacky shit, which is very funny to me.
Yes,
I will always think back fondly about him playing Two-Face and how he was like, "I will kill you" to Jim Carrey.
Oh yeah.
It always makes me laugh.
A little behind the scenes drama with him.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh my God. Imagine though if we got Clint Eastwood up in this bitch. That would have been. It'd have been like, okay,
same tone.
He only uses a 44 Magnum. That's it. He uses none of these fucking alien guns. 44, and I'm signing on right now.
I don't know. I think it's perfect casting with Tommy Lee Jones. I don't know.
No, I agree. I think it actually would have been dumber with Clint Eastwood. But it would have been interesting. It definitely would have been interesting.
I get the approach. Like, it's around the same realm. I get it.
This movie is, like, so special and so important to me that I truly cannot imagine anyone but Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith playing these parts.
Mm-hmm.
True. I don't know if that's, like, to its own detriment, but, like, for me, because I saw it so young, I was just like, no. It couldn't be anyone else.
It was definitely to Men in Black International's detriment, I'll tell you that.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Cool. Now let's slap on over to the next line of the script, which reads, Will Smith was cast because Barry Sonnenfeld's wife was a fan of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Sonnenfeld also liked his performance in Six Degrees of Separation. Cool. Ooh. The studio, however, preferred Chris O'Donnell for the role, fresh off his portrayal of Dick Grayson in Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, and Spielberg told Sonnenfeld to take him to dinner to convince him to do it. Damn.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah. However, Sonnenfeld got him to not accept the role by saying that this was not a good director and that the script was one O'Donnell should skip.
So this is a weird way to phrase this sentence, but basically Sonnenfeld went to dinner with him and was like, "I'm not a good director and this is a bad script. Don't take it."
Wow. Yeah.
He's like, "I know I'm in over my head here. I've never done anything like this. I don't know, man. Like, are you sure you want to latch onto this chain?" He's like, "Well, you say it like that. I guess you're doing me a favor, huh?" It's like, "Yep, I'm doing you a favor.
I am doing you a favor."
Mm-hmm. I knew about this casting possibility. David Schwimmer also turned their asses down. I know it's just a character he plays, but I just don't like David Schwimmer, dude. I'm a David Schwimmer hater.
I don't
only think... because of the character he played. I don't know. He's just I see that dude. He's got a punchable
in
face.
Other things he does. Have you seen David Schwimmer in anything other than Friends?
You know what? Out here, he's actually in an HR video for sexual harassment that I had to watch.
That's not a great alternative.
Honestly, really fucking weird seeing Ross Geller fucking approach a lady after hours, be like, I can drive you home. And it was really fucking weird. I was like, okay.
Fucking Ross Geller be like, hey, don't molest people at work.
No, he was the molester.
Oh, no!
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he was definitely like the guy. And then, you know what? There was another famous actress opposite him who was also, she was great. I was like, only in LA would they have me watch this fucking HR video.
Yeah, I've never seen that. Like, it's always like people.
Oh, look it up. Look it up. It's really creepy.
It's so weird.
That's weird.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, there's no way after, if he would have got Men in Black, he would have done that video for sure. But, you know, hey.
All right. So let's continue here. Yes. Like Jones, Smith said he accepted the role after meeting with Spielberg and cited his success as a producer. Rick Baker was approached to provide the prosthetic and animatronic aliens, many of whom would have more otherworldly designs instead of looking humanoid. For example, the reveal of Gentle Rosenberg's Arkelian nature went from a man with a light under his ear to a small alien hidden inside his human head. Ooh. Which, fantastic animatronics.
Very good work. That's so, very good work. It's all practical, mm-hmm. too, which is so fucking cool.
Yep.
Which helps with, the movie aging. Like, I think it helped it age very gracefully.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%. The music video, not so much, but still pretty funky.
Hey, there's still some CGI in this movie, and we'll get to that, but I'm just like, oof, you can't tell. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. All right, so Baker would describe Men in Black as the most complex production in his career. Quote, requiring more sketches than all of my previous movies together, end quote.
Which is crazy coming from Rick fucking Baker.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Mm-hmm. Baker had to have approval from both Sonnenfeld and Spielberg. Quote, it was like Steven likes the head on this one and Barry really likes the body on this one. So why don't you do a mix and match? And I'd say because it wouldn't make any sense, end quote. Oof. Sonnenfeld also changed a lot of the film's aesthetic during pre-production. Quote, I started out saying aliens shouldn't be what humans perceive them to be. Why do they need eyes? So Rick did these great designs, and I'd say, that's great. But how do we know where he's looking? And I ended up where everyone else did. Only I took 3 months, end quote. Oh, man.
Working in Hollywood now, I could definitely see that.
Yeah. Yeah, where it's just like you start in one place, you end up in the opposite place, and then you want to go back to the original place.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, that was shit. Sorry about all the hours you put into that. Can we just go back a little bit? Yeah. Okay, good, good. Nice.
It's like, this is great, but I have some notes. It's always the goddamn fucking notes.
Always the notes.
Failure gain!
sorry.
No, anyways, good.
The McKays... God, my voice left right there.
So what I'm 16 and
hitting puberty all over again.
I know, dude.
Maquettes. Let's go Maquettes. Can we call them Maquettes?
Sure.
Maquettes.
The Maquettes.
The Maquettes built by Baker's team were later digitized by Industrial Light and Magic, which was responsible for the visual effects and computer-generated imagery for more mobile digital versions of the aliens.
Sounds like an interesting little hybrid.
The little alien said, time to go mobile.
That was good.
Thank you. Further changes were made during post-production to simplify the plot line involving the possession of the tiny galaxy. The Arkelians would hand over the galaxy to the Baltians?
I have no idea how to pronounce it. They were completely cut out of the movie, recently learned.
The Baltians. Ending, of course, a very long war. The bugs needed to feed on the casualties and steal the galaxy in order to continue the war. Through changing of subtitles, the images on MIB's main computer, and Frank the Pug's dialogue, the Baltinians were eliminated from the plot, though the film's novelization still contains the Baltians.
But they got the Baltinians in the second one, so.
Oh. I haven't seen that second one in such a long time.
That was the one good joke I liked from it.
Talk about it.
Uh-huh. Earth goes from being potentially destroyed in the crossfire between the two races into being possibly destroyed by the Archaeans themselves to prevent the bugs from getting the galaxy. Oh, man, we got ourselves a story here, guys. Of course, these changes to the plot were carried out when only 2 weeks remained in the film's post-production.
Cutting it down to the wire.
That be close.
Damn, son.
That's crazy. Like, imagine, like, you've been working on this film for years, and then 2 weeks to it going out, you're just like, what if we change the whole last half of the plot?
I know.
It could either be Men in Black, or it could be, like, Josh Trank's Fantastic Four. They can go either fucking direction.
Oh, God.
Yeah, or that's a production horror story right there.
There, I'm sure it is. Or some of that might have gotten transferred over to the animated series that was produced later on.
I forgot about that.
Yes. It was a common mainstay in 90s television channels, for sure.
Was that on WB? Kids WB?
I believe it was WB. Right. Right there with the Ghostbuster show and all the other good shit.
All the other classic child movies.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. We're going to do a breakdown. I'm going to take red. Fwen, you'll take purple. And Phil, you'll take black. Sound good?
Sounds good
to me. Let's do it.
Hell yeah.
Let's do it.
Get away from her, you bitch.
Oh, man.
All the quotes. Kicking us off, at the Mexico-United States border, two men in black suits, Agent K and Agent D, interrupt a border patrol sting. Before we even get to the next part, the opening title sequence of this movie, score by Danny Elfman, fucking chef's kiss.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. It's a long one, too, actually. It's much longer than I anticipated. Yeah.
As a kid, I was like, what's going on? I'm like, I see now.
Even in theaters, I was like, when are we going to get to the fireworks factory?
Yep.
When the dragonfly smashes against the windshield. Pay attention. So they take one of the men attempting to cross the border, who is, in fact, an extraterrestrial in disguise named Mikey.
Can I just say one thing real quick?
Yes.
I think my dad's favorite part of this entire movie is Tommy Lee Jones speaking Spanish to the guy.
Yes.
Dude, and by the way, Tommy Lee Jones' Spanish is like a million times better than Fwen's. His Spanish is really good.
I would say that for sure, too, because my Spanish is terrible.
Tommy Lee Jones, I don't know if he took a Spanish class before this or anything, but his Spanish was actually really fucking good.
His pronunciation is clear and good and very easy. Yeah, he did.
Doesn't it feel like it's in character, too? Like, just his tone.
Oh, yeah. He's super laid back, super in character. Oh, yeah.
He's like, you don't speak a word of Spanish, do you? Mm-hmm. And it's just so good.
Yep.
Thank you for
National
that.
National treasure.
Has he done anything cancelable?
I hope not.
I was going to say, I don't know.
Let's not dive into it. I hope.
Ignorance is bliss in this instance.
Yes, exactly.
So when Mikey, the alien, tries to attack one of the patrol officers, Kay is forced to shoot him and erase the memories of everyone in the group, creating a cover story of an explosion in an underground gas pipeline. This was also a moment in the beginning where I was just like, oh, it's going to be that kind of movie. Like, just so good. I loved it. So, deciding that he is now too old to continue working, D chooses to retire and has K erase his memory.
Mm-hmm. There's no paperwork, none of that shit.
Just
all right, buddy.
He didn't even straight up say, "I'm ready to retire." He was just like, K was just like, "Well, you can't shoot aliens anymore, so I guess this is the end of the line." He put him to pasture like he was a fucking horse.
Yep.
I know. It's just like, you either get the memory wipe or the shotgun. Whichever one you want, buddy.
Meanwhile,
I'm not bearing no hole today.
Meanwhile, we cut to NYPD officer James Darrell Edwards III as he catches an unnaturally agile fleeing criminal and sees his eyes blink strangely before he leaps from the roof of the Guggenheim Museum. This museum is so fucking cool looking, and I want to go so bad.
Yeah. Also, I like, another double-decker bus jump. A la Rush Hour. What a late 90s thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just raining black people here in New York.
That's a great line.
That whole sequence is just so good.
The chase action too is really well choreographed, I must say.
Absolutely. The shot where you're looking down from the top of the Guggenheim Museum and you see all the floors. I don't know why. It just always, like, I thought it was like, this is like kind of eerie and weird. And to this day, the parking structure when you leave Universal Studios always reminds me of that. Because it's like that circular downward spiral. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know why I always like think of them being the same thing when they're not. Anyway, so he jumps off the roof, and then naturally there's a police investigation, as one does. During his interrogation, Kay arrives and scouts James as a potential new partner, impressed by his ability to chase down an alien. Kay explains to James that their organization, the Men in Black, was founded after the first contact was made with aliens in 1961. At this time, Earth was established as a politically neutral zone for alien refugees. Now, I did yada yada through quite a bit.
I mean, his training is hilarious.
Honestly, one of my favorite... I mean, I'm going to say that about most of this movie, but, like, it's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
No, seriously, yeah. He's like... I said the best, sir, with honors.
Oh, man.
He's so excited because he doesn't know why the fuck we're here. Oh, so good.
So your boy Captain America over here. Best of the best of the best, sir, with honors. that entire scene where he's just like, I've had enough, and he's just like pulling the table, and it makes the most screeching noise for like 5 minutes. He's like, you want to get down on this?
Or like Grip Torn. Could you care to explain why little Tiffany had to die?
Mm-hmm. Little white girl out here in the middle of the ghetto. Oh,
She's starting up some shit, Zed.
And I'd appreciate it if you got out of my face about it. Or do I owe her an apology?
In theaters, that made my fucking dad lose it. Like, he was just... Because we were big Fresh Prince fans, so seeing his ascension... We were just psyched. Again, Independence Day the year before, then this, like, was fucking awesome.
This was really the year of Will Smith, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That was the era. Mm-hmm.
Take it away, fine.
Oh, fuck, it's my time. Okay, cool. It's my time.
Sir!
I knew you were going to do that. I knew you were going to do that.
Stupid Phil. Oh, anyways.
It's okay. When I said Kay is forced to shoot him, I almost stopped and went, shoot her! Oh, <God. laughs>
So the Men in Black is a secret organization that monitors and polices these aliens and uses neuralizers to erase the memories of anyone who witnesses alien activities. James agrees to join, taking a new identity as you guessed it, Agent J. And his civilian identity is erased from government records.
This sequence scared the shit out of me as a kid.
Yeah.
Because when he got his fingerprints burned off, I was like, oh no, that's scary.
Yeah. You kind of really realize the stakes when you're younger, too. You're like, oh, he's fucking gone.
I always wondered, like, is his whole family dead?
Like, something like that, right?
He had no qualms whatsoever just being like, all right, I'm in. Like, what?
Yes.
Wasn't there, like... Isn't there a very popular like meme template that's been happening for like about a year?
It is.
It's like, hey, is it worth it? Oh yeah, it's worth it.
Yes.
If you're strong enough.
Strong enough.
Yeah. That is still popular. I know you're not really on socials right now, but it is still a popular format. So you're not out of date in bringing that up. I also thought about that. When I saw
No, I was gonna say I always see like restaurants with like extra spicy food, and you're like, is the spicy burrito worth it? If you're strong enough, like stuff like that, like Taco Bell.
Yeah.
I think also, like, when I rewatched this movie for the episode and I saw that, I also had a bit of a moment where I'm like, it's the meme.
One of my favorites is when we all watched Fellowship of the Ring and we're just like, fuck the amount of memes in this shit. Oh my so God.
Many. All There's of so us many just there. Screaming, it's the yes. meme.
We were. Yes, raucous for sure. Anyways, meanwhile, an alien crash lands in upstate New York, kills a farmer named Edgar, and begins wearing his skin as a disguise, the Edgar suit.
It's Edgar.
Edgar.
Edgar suit.
J, Ed, K investigate the crash site and discover this alien is a quote-unquote bug, an extremely dangerous cockroach-like species. This whole scene, again, just fantastic special effects. The saucer special effects I always thought were really fucking cool. And the sugar water.
I was actually just talking about this at the gym earlier. As a kid, I thought this movie made sugar water sound delicious.
It did. Until you tried it one time as a kid, and you're like,
disgusting.
Nope.
I tried it too.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. But yeah, it's gross. It's that in the same way that, like, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe fooled me into thinking Turkish Delight was delicious.
I never had Turkish Delight.
Yeah, it's not.
Is it bad?
It's fine. It's not betray your whole family good. Like, you know, like, it's.
Yeah, but we're not British, dude. Those fuckers are.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not a British child in the grips of World War II or World War One. World War One. So, you know, I guess it'd be like that. But
I guess so, huh? Just take it like, what is this? It's not rations? Fucking let's go. Fuck them.
I know. I'm just like, this is not good. But yeah, sugar water as a kid, I was just like, this is delicious. This is going to be just delicious. And it was gross.
I feel like just, yeah, that remembering that one time, I'm like, this has to be it. Do I need more? No, fuck that. I'm not doing this anymore. anyways, the bug kills two disguised aliens who are sent to a city morgue overseen by coroner Laurel Weaver. J and K inspect the bodies, and J and Laurel accidentally open the head of one, revealing a small injured alien in control in a control cockpit. The alien tells them to prevent war. The galaxy is on Orion's belt before dying, much like me, as before Alex told me to record.
It's true.
Kay neuralizes Laurel and tells Jay that the alien was Rosenberg, a member of the Archelian royal family.
Damn,
I can say that one.
Yeah, right. damn, this one's one of the royal family. Like, oh, God.
Well, they question an informant, Frank the Pug, which is a fucking hilarious interrogation, who explains that Rosenberg was the guardian of a galaxy that is a precious source of subatomic energy. The bug killed Rosenberg to acquire it, so the bugs may destroy the Archelians. Yeah. There's such a hilarious. I think that part when I was a kid, I was fucking losing it. Like, for sure.
That guy's for sure an alien. Well, if you don't like it, you can kiss my furry butt.
Oh my gosh.
Also, quick side note, I forgot to mention the aliens that visit is it's Carol's. I can't pronounce his last name. You met him at HorrorCon, Phil.
Oh, yeah. From Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
Adam's family. He was Lurch. Yeah, he was Lurch in Adam's family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I always, I remember, anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. I mainly wanted to bring up that you met him.
That's right. They sat right across from us, and he is a tall.
He is so tall.
Yeah. Tall He's a gentle giant. He's
yeah.
a gentle
giant. He was really sweet.
So Frank also tells him that the galaxy is on Earth and is very small. An Archelian warship enters Earth's orbit, issuing an ultimatum to Men in Black to give them the galaxy. Jay deduces the galaxy is in a jewel on the collar of Rosenberg's cat, Orion, which is in Laurel's care. This is some good plotting here, I must say.
It really is.
The script is strong for this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of quality in the script. Something that the sequels just did not live up to.
Not even fucking close.
Yep. Okay, well, looks like it's my turn, and I will take it over from here. So, the bug reaches the same conclusion and arrives at the morgue first. It seizes and swallows the galaxy and flees with Laurel, the Archelians, who are willing to destroy the galaxy rather than let the bugs have it, warn MIB that they will destroy Earth in 1 hour unless the galaxy is returned.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh. The morgue attendant, the guy, I was like, it wasn't until I saw it as an adult, I'm like, is that David Cross?
I was just going to bring up that scene right now. Oh my God. When I was a teenager, I would always be like, yeah, how can I help? He's like, a man came in here the other day. A dead man. He's like, and that means what to me? He's like, it's a pet cat. I like it back, please. And then he's like, okay. And then he's like swapping the, he's squatting the flies. Yeah. He's like, don't do it. He's like, do what? Don't do it. Like, it's fucking, I don't know, man. Didn't he come out in the sequel too?
So yes, right? He's in the sequel. I don't think he plays the same guy, but he's for sure in the sequel.
That's so funny. I think he plays like a typical like nerdy dude living in mom's basement.
Right? That's right. Yeah. He has a little more of a role in that one.
I'm just like, why did they cast him? I don't know. I'm sure they're like friends or something. But yeah, I remember watching it. Not this most recent rewatch, but I think, I saw him and I was like, there's no way. And then doing research for it, I was like, oh, okay, it is him.
There you go. All right. With all transports locked down, Jay realizes the Bug's only escape is the observation towers of the New York State Pavilion at Flushing Meadows, which was built for the 1964 New York World's Fair to disguise two actual real flying saucers.
We also get that great sequence of him driving upside down, which as a kid just delighted me in ways I cannot explain.
Oh, absolutely.
So he's like, you do know Elvis is dead, right? Elvis is not dead. He just went home.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man. Fwen, you know what? Dude, guys, we should be Men in Black for Halloween, dude. I would love to be.
Oh, that would be sick. Oh, I'm down.
Webster, you can be Jay, and Fwen, you can be Fwen the Pug. How about that, dude? Bro. He suits up in the sequel, dude.
I'll get the ears, exactly. I remember that he suits up in the sequel. I'll put the ears on. We go, dude. No, I got to show you this picture. My job before this one, the entire warehouse department came as the Men in Black for Halloween.
That's awesome. That's
cool. With one person being an alien. It's fucking hilarious, and I will find this picture. So I'll find it right now.
That's so funny.
Please, send it over to us. Please, I would like to see this. That sounds
funny. I love that idea as a costume, guys. We gotta...
Yeah.
I'm like way down for this. You guys have no idea.
I think Anyways. Phil has a predetermined Halloween costume already, though.
Oh, gosh. Maybe.
You need two costumes. We'll see.
See. Yeah, that's true.
We'll see. Depends what we're doing this year. But we got to do something really cool if I'm going to do two costumes. Anyways, let's see. Let's continue here. The Bug attempts to take off, but Jay and Kay shoot down the ship, and the Bug sheds Edgar's skin to reveal its true form while expanding greatly in size. I won! You don't matter! And in fact, in a few seconds, you won't even be matter.
Dude, that's such a good line.
Dude, I used to say that shit a lot to my dad.
I used to say that.
And then
too,
my actually. Mom, I would say that to my mom. Every time my mom would like yell at me, I'd be like, oh, you idiot! I won! And she's like, she'll throw like the fucking chunkla at me and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. The noisy cricket at you? Yeah.
The noisy cricket.
For me, it's
fun fact.
It's you want me to put my hands on my head.
Like this?
Like this?
Oh, dude. Vincent D'Onofrio, man.
He so scared good. The shit out of me.
I fucking love him in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I sent the picture. That was only some of them, but. Seeing the warehouse show up like this was fucking awesome.
Let's see this.
That's great.
Oh, wow. Look at you. Oh, wait. Where are you, Fwen?
It's in the group.
I'm not in there. The warehouse today. That was just them.
Oh, okay. That's so cool. They even had weapons and everything, too. That's so cool.
Yeah. We start getting it together now, boys. Let's go.
Very cool. Okay. Let's continue here. Fun fact. The final Bug was supposed to be practical, but last minute they changed his design to look more cockroach-like. And this little giant, big-ass Edgar cockroach swallows Jay and Kay's guns, and Kay goads it to swallow him as well. The Bug begins to board the second ship, however. And at this time, Jay steps on cockroaches from a dumpster to antagonize it, stalling it until Kay finds his gun in its stomach and shoots it from the inside. The remains of the Bug attacks the two of them, but Laurel destroys it with Jay's gun. Interesting job you guys have. Dude, Linda Fiorentino, I think this role and Dogma... Yes. And there was another movie that was called Jade that came out also like in the late 90s, I think. That's like the only roles I know her in. But let me just say this one time for Linda Fiorentino. Herb Derb.
Wish I would have seen more of you. I was going to throw in a Herb Derb, too.
Yeah. Wish I would have seen more of you.
I thought she was so freaking dreamy. Again, I'm like fucking 5 years old. I'm just like, she's so pretty.
Yeah. In this movie, oh my gosh, she was fine.
Yeah. She was. She was, absolutely.
When she's the like part when trying to seduce. Oh my god. Yeah.
In the morgue?
Yes, the morgue part.
Yeah, he's like, do you know what I like to do when I get lonely sometimes? And then Will Smith's like, oh, damn, girl, you do start fast, don't you? Good stuff. Yeah, dude. Yeah, she's. I was recently just watching Dogma. You know, apparently that movie's super hard to come about.
It's very rare. Yes.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. It's very rare to find. 28 Days Later.
28 Days Later, yeah.
Both out of print and for our US DVDs.
Anyway, invest in physical media while you can.
Yep.
Funny. Coming from you, Webster.
I know.
That is hilarious.
Hey.
Wow. We got you on the podcast saying that. Woo!
Just because I don't doesn't mean it's not important.
That's just the thing. I'm going to isolate that sentence right there.
Oh,
like, this is not the flex you think it is, Phil.
You got Lost Highway back, Phil, okay? You won.
For real.
You won.
I gave it back.
After a year of not investing in it. Ha ha. Oh my god! Anyways, we're gonna depart this later.
I was gonna
on.
Say, just keep it moving.
We're gonna depart from this.
we're gonna have hit Phil with the neuralizer on this one so he can stay for a whole fucking year.
Please,
Jesus Christ!
Please.
He's gonna think it's 2020 freaking 3 again.
Yes. Oh god, let's continue here. Where did I leave off? After recovering the galaxy from the bug's remains, K admits to the J that he is ready to retire from MIB. And has been training Jay as a replacement rather than a partner.
That's so beautiful.
I know. Mm-hmm. After bidding each other farewell, Jay neuralizes Kay, creating a cover story that he was in a coma for 35 years. Laurel joins MIB as Jay's new partner, Agent L. Might I say, she looks smoking in that suit, too, by the way.
It's true. Mm-hmm. I remember, that was one of those, like, do I just think you're pretty or am I attracted to this? Turns out I was attracted to it.
Cool. In the closing scene, perspective pulls back across billions of light years, revealing our Milky Way galaxy to be contained within a marble that an alien is using to play a game. Oof. I always thought that was so cool.
It gave me an existential crisis at the tender age of 5. I was just like, what do you mean? This control, I mean.
I was just like, oh man, we are a speck amongst a speck amongst a speck.
It definitely gave
do
me,
I matter?
Yeah, exactly. It gave me a healthy fear and appreciation for astronomy, which I was it definitely put into perspective, like, none of this matters.
Yeah, astronomy is way cooler than, you know, astrology.
Hey, I'm a fan of both, so.
Cool, dude.
I remember looking for Orion's belt, like, after this, too.
Dude, I would always spot it, too. Because of that movie, every time I see Orion's belt, I'm like, hey, there it is right there.
Yeah, like, I don't give a shit about any fucking of these dippers, none of that fucking thing. Yep. Give me Orion's belt.
Yep. There's Orion's belt. Man. Anyways, Alex, continue us off over here. What you got for us?
Hell yeah. In space, no one can hear you scream. So, Men in Black earned $4.8 million from Tuesday night previews and went on to gross $14 million on its opening day, bringing the gross total for the opening weekend of $18.8 million. I'm sorry. And then during its opening weekend, it generated $51.1 million, making it the third highest opening weekend of all time behind Batman Forever and The Lost World Jurassic Park.
Damn, cool. Tommy Lee Jones on two of those, huh?
That's
pretty good.
The film then grossed $84.1 million during its five-day Wednesday opening. It surpassed Independence Day for having the three records. These were the biggest three-day 4th of July opening weekend. Oh, sorry. These were the biggest three-day 4th of July opening weekend, the largest July opening weekend, and the highest opening weekend for a non-sequel film. The film would hold the latter two records for 3 years until the year 2000 when X-Men took them back.
I mean, Will Smith having two back-to-back records like that, though. That was pretty good,
too. He was hot shit.
Dude, 2 4th of July's?
Matched. I know. And then just to... And, dude, he was offered the role of Neo. Could you imagine if he even took The Matrix? I can't see him in the role, but, dude, that would be another, like, monumental, like, box office draw right there, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the same thing as this, where I'm like, I don't know if I can imagine anyone else.
Yeah.
True.
So, moving right along. On Rotten Tomatoes, Men in Black holds an approval rating of 91% based on 93 reviews and an average score of 7.5 out of 10. The site's critical consensus reads, quote, thanks to a smart script, spectacular set pieces, and charismatic performances from its leads, Men in Black is an entirely satisfying summer blockbuster hit. Unquote.
This is what, okay, yeah. I feel like it should be more praise. I don't know.
I think that's still pretty high praise.
It's still pretty high praise, but I don't know. Part of me is like entirely satisfying.
It's completely satisfying. Yeah. It is, I will call you tomorrow, satisfying.
Yes, exactly. I was just like, what? Just leave cab money by the fucking dresser? Is that how you think of this fucking movie?
Am I nothing but a cheap whore to you? Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes, all right.
Gene Siskel gave the film 3.5 stars out of 4, praising the film as, quote, a smart, funny, and hip adventure film in a summer of car wrecks and explosions, unquote. That's fair.
Don't talk about Armageddon that way. No, I don't think that was 97.
No, not yet. What am I I'm thinking about? What came out in 97?
Yeah, what's the 97 right car chase?
Car wrecks? Movie? Car chases? What is it? Speed 2? Cruise Control?
1997. That was a boat. Boat. Summer movie.
Oh, Face Off. Face Off. Oh. What else was there? Con Air. Face Off for sure had a lot of destruction in 1997.
I mean, Event Horizon.
Event Horizon. Okay.
No, okay, here's the thing. My Google algorithm knows I only like horror movies, so it's not showing me anything.
You know what? Mine's giving me a lot of that shit too, Webster. You are not. Wow. When Money Talks. Come on, don't talk shit on Money Talks. That was a great action Money movie talks. For the summer of 97.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Air Force One. Yeah. Anyway.
Air Force One.
God, yeah. These are all bangers. I don't know what the fuck this guy's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times gave the film 3 stars out of 4, giving particular praise to the film's self-reflective humor and Rick Baker's alien creature designs. On the critical, wrong side of things, Todd McCarthy acknowledged the film was, quote, witty and sometimes surreal sci-fi comedy in which he praised the visual effects, Baker's creature's design, and Elfman's musical score. However, he felt the film, quote, doesn't manage to sustain this level of inventiveness, delight, and surprise throughout the remaining 2/3 of the picture, unquote.
Sure. You fucking maintain that remaining 2/3 of his fucking review over here, dude. Fuck off.
And of course, the Horrible People's podcast least favorite dweeb Owen Gleiberman of Entertainment Weekly graded the film a C+, writing, quote, Men in Black celebrates the triumph of attitude over everything else, plausibility, passion, any sense that what we're watching actually matters. The aliens, for all their slimy visual zest, aren't particularly scary or funny, quote, in parentheses, they aren't allowed to become characters, unparentheses, and so the joke of watching Smith and Jones crack-wise in their faces quickly wears thin, unquote. Fuck you, Gleiberman.
Seriously, oh, come on, man. He's the fucking worst.
Yeah, for sure.
They didn't give him the fucking neuralizer, dude. Write a better review.
Men in Black won Best Makeup at the 70th Academy Awards and was also nominated for Best Original Music or Comedy Score, and Best Art Direction, losing the latter two to The Full Monty and Titanic, respectively. If you're going to lose to anything, Titanic is probably the one to lose to. Mm. The film was also nominated for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy at the 55th Golden Globe Awards, losing to As Good As It Gets.
Oh my, okay. Yeah. Is it?
Have you guys ever seen As Good As It Gets?
It looks not good.
No, it's actually, I don't know,
which
man.
Which one is that?
That's the one, Jack Nicholson.
It has Jack Nicholson.
Thank God. And Helen Hunt.
Oh, yes.
And Helen Hunt, that's right. I remember it now. Never had an interest in it, though, unfortunately, so yeah. I always skipped it.
Not bad.
Interesting. Okay.
86 on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, it's James L. Brooks. Well, I'm a little more interested now.
Oh, my God.
He's a fucking good guy.
So, when it comes to best makeup, as Rick Baker might say, he makes this look good. Men in Black went on to spur not one, not two, but three sequels in 2002, 2012, and 2019, respectively. But the 2019 sequel starring Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. I did not know the 2012 one existed.
I totally forgot about the 2019. Bless you. 2019, that's the Hemsworth one,
it's
right?
It's Hemsworth and Tessa Hemsworth. Thompson. Yeah.
Yes. I totally forgot about that one.
I saw it in theaters.
You did?
How was that?
I did.
How was
that experience like?
How was that? Yeah, how was that?
We can get to it in discussion.
Okay. Right, for sure. Okay.
For sure.
All right.
For sure.
So, with 510,000 reviews on Letterboxd, with an average 3.6 out of 5, onto the best of the best of the best on Letterboxd.
With honors.
Right off the bat with Patrick Willems, quote, one of the best, most accurate movies about living in New York City, unquote. 4 stars. once again, appearing on the podcast, Brian Espitia with 5 stars, quote, makes a compelling case for blockbusters being a tight 90 minutes and an extremely compelling case for Vincent D'Onofrio's performance being one of the greatest of all time, unquote.
Hey.
Yep.
Calvin Demmer with 4.5 stars. May I ask why you felt little Tiffany deserved to die, unquote. Dylan Gorzin with 3.5 stars saying, quote, gotta love how Kay retires at the end of the movie and being happy with a normal life, only for them to retcon it entirely in the sequel.
I know. That was so dumb.
I know.
I was like, let the man live his happy life.
I know. I mean, but that's the thing. In the sequel, they retcon it so he's miserable, which is awful.
God.
And finally, Amaya with 3 stars. Quote, the fun, hot-blooded guy and the deadpan serious guy dynamic gets me every single time. Look at them go, unquote. I'm also a fan of this in buddy cop movies.
Yeah, it's a good dynamic. I agree.
Yeah.
And that's all she wrote for Men in Black, guys.
All right.
We made it.
Oh, yeah.
We did it.
We made it to discussion. God, this is
good. Perfect. Fucking movie.
So let's dive right into discussion, guys. Let's start with Quinn, what are your thoughts on Men in Black?
Boy, is this a good movie.
So no, true.
This is like we were saying before, there's not too much I can expand on except to say that it's such a fine-tuned experience that it's one of those movies that I think you can simultaneously have as background and also just sit down and shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
It's just such a dynamic, good movie that is non-stop. It just doesn't let up in any frame. I don't know what the fuck Owen Gleiberman was talking about, but it got me a little hot there because he's wrong. it just reminds me of going to the movies with my family and getting a VHS later on, and then always just it being a part of growing up and then learning about aliens and appreciating the take that they do on it. Like, this movie feels like it's made with a lot of love. I always wish Barry Sonnenfeld had a better career because of, like, his output in this era.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, he's had such an imagination, and I feel like Burton got all the credit for, like, the types of, like, the type, they both made similar types of movies. Burton with a little more gothy, and then Sonnenfeld with a little more witty, I would say. But, you know, the world picked their favorites. It's just good. It's just good. I'm happy I picked it for my birthday. I fucking love aliens. So that's me. Who else got this?
Yo, Phil, your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this movie is perfect the way it is. It's one of those movies that I can just watch again and again and again. This is a movie that me and my dad, like, kind of grew up with. we quote all the time. Like, he, like, yeah, there is, like, a lot of nostalgias. Like, is it a... I said perfect earlier. I don't mean, like, I'm not going to put my, you know, movie critic hat and, like, critique Men in Black. Because it's not, like, a... It's not, it's, I'm not gonna, cause I'm, and I don't mean it like in a dismissive way either. It is still a very quality movie. Like, as we were talking about earlier, the script earlier, like, there is some good themes here and there are some really good character dynamics here, but like, it's just, it's more than just a comfort movie, I want to say. It's far from being a guilty pleasure, and it's like, and it's far more than just a comfort film, if that makes any sense.
Total sense.
That makes perfect sense. I'm with you.
It's also in a vein of a thought that I've also had about this movie, so for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those movies where it's like, it just brings it's, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if it's too soon. I mean, it's, this movie's 20-something years old, more than 25 years old now, so it's like, I don't know, dare I say timeless? Like, it's kind of a timeless flick,
dude. It feels
kind of
timeless.
Honestly, I think revisiting it in 2024, yeah, and, like, I was just like, this is still, like, it holds up remarkably well.
Absolutely. So much.
I was actually a little scared about watching it, because I haven't seen it in a very long time, and I was a little concerned, but yeah, it holds up great.
Yeah. I feel like you can... Yeah. I feel like you can watch this to somebody who's just, like, learning about movies, who's just in you know, let's pick out this, let's be hypothetical here. Let's say somebody, a Gen Z kid who wants to get into cinema but missed out on watching Men in Black when it was hot back in the day, you know? And I think if you were to show this, I think they would appreciate this. Like, there's... It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's in the realm, like, of they don't make them like this anymore. Like, if you're going to really amplify that sentence,
us turning into this is our a great parents. Example.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're getting there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I absolutely love the shit out of this movie. It brings a smile to my face every time it's on TV, or if it's one of those movies, like, you can play it in the background, but I'm also going to be like, oh, yeah, here comes that one scene. I'm going to sit my ass down and watch it.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
You know? Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this movie. It's fucking, it's a gem.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in case you guys couldn't, like, gather from, like, all of my quotes and me being an excited little child throughout this, I grew up watching this movie. As I've mentioned so many times on this podcast, I wasn't really allowed to watch horror movies because both my mom and my dad don't like horror. But sci-fi was the exception. Like, and this is a comedy, so, like, it doesn't really count, but, like, any kind of sci-fi action flick, I was totally allowed to watch, which is crazy because I saw Independence Day probably far too young and Signs far too young. But this is one of those movies for me. Some of my earliest memories involves watching this on VHS and dancing around my parents' bedroom to Men in Black, right? So I just have such a fondness for this movie. And it made me think now about what I perceive to be a perfect film, right? Because, like, we talk, like, just last week we talked about Kill Bill, and from, like, an artistic perspective, and, like, how, in our opinion, like, it's a 5 out of 5. It is, in essence, a perfect movie. And I was thinking about, like, my rating for this, and I was just like, I feel like in its own way it's also a 5 out of 5, but in its execution, in its effectiveness to tell a 90 minutes entertaining story. I was thinking about that also in terms of, like, not again to put on, like, my we live in a society hat, but, like,
do it
but no, like, so, like, so many of the movies that people, not so many, but, like, generally speaking, a lot of original movies that people are coming up with now are all, like, trying to make a statement about something, and I'm like, this is just a movie about aliens and saving the universe. Like, there isn't a secondary theme or, like, something to read out of it. It's just a really well done, really entertaining movie about aliens. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It is brilliant in that. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's kind of, that was kind of my takeaway from this watch. I had a hard time because I kind of tried to have it on, like, side by side while I was doing other shit. And I was like, I can't. Like, this movie's so fucking funny. I just, it demands my attention.
Yeah.
So that's my thoughts on it. I know, like, that's a little, like, film dork hat E, but
no, I think we're on the same page. I think we're all on the same page with that one. Absolutely.
So those are my thoughts. Does this movie, we'll just kind of keep this one free flowing. Does this movie hold up for you? For me, it 100% does. A short for like a couple moments where the CGI, I was like, okay, that's a little dated. But other than that, it holds up so well.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Exact same thing. With a couple like spots of CGI, you know, and then maybe the CD. This is going to replace CD soon. I was like, no, that's GameCube right there, buddy. That didn't work.
but that also kind of made me roll my eyes a little.
Yeah, yeah. That was one where I was like, oh, they're so close. So close. That's not a scan disc at all.
Right. If they had made it a little tiny chip, then it would have been different. Yeah. But they couldn't have known.
They couldn't have known. Like, what is that? An iPod Touch? Okay. I mean, honestly, yeah. It's just like you know, we were saying before, timeless. It feels timeless.
Yeah.
I think it always will be. And this holds up 100%. I'm going to be watching this movie my whole life. Yeah. I can tell you that right now.
Same. 100%. Yeah, I'm up there with you guys. It definitely holds up still. Like, it still had that Spielberg flair to it, too, which is really...
Yeah.
Like, a lot of his films also remain timeless as well, even though it's not really directed by him. But his hands are all over this thing. And you totally feel it. And, dude, Barry Sonnenfeld, dude, this ruled in the 90s, man. Have you guys seen Toys with Robin Williams?
I haven't seen that since the 90s.
I believe he directed that one. Good Lord. He also did Toys? Get Shorty.
And he'll
so,
Get Shorty.
So Get Shorty is Get the movie Shorty. He was working on in the beginning that he was like, I can't do this. I'm working on Get Shorty. And then they basically prolonged production until he finished it so he could direct it.
Oh.
So that was it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No, dude. So like,
he didn't do that. He didn't do Toys.
He didn't do Toys, huh? Dude, I'm confusing with something else. But Adam's Family for sure.
Adam's Family. Yeah. Wild Wild West.
But Adam said,
He does have a very specific style.
Yeah.
Because I was about to bring up Wild Wild West because I also really like Wild Wild West as a kid. I understand now that it's not good, but as a kid, I fucking loved it. Ended with a music video.
A great music video, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But interesting. Okay, yeah, I agree. True. This movie holds up. It's great. So now we can talk about it. What sequels have you seen? Thoughts on the sequels, since I doubt we will ever cover any of them. never say never.
I saw all of them except for the last one. I didn't see the Chris Hemsworth one and then the Tessa Thompson one.
I haven't seen the 2012 one.
I saw all of them, but dude, the 2012 one, oh my God, with Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Dude, perfect guy to play a young Tommy Lee Jones. Seriously. His impression was incredible. Like he was perfect choice to play a young Tommy Lee
Jones. Now I want to watch it purely because I didn't realize he played a young Tommy Lee Jones in it.
Mm-hmm.
So now
I want to know what's going on.
Yeah, Jay travels to the 60s where Kay first, I think it's his year one at MIB.
Yeah, where this event took place, the one that they reference here. Yeah, I don't know. I think 2 and 3 are just as good as each other, in which that, like, I'm not compelled to watch them again. They have moments. They have moments that are kind of funny, but, like, there's something about it. They feel forced almost when I watch them.
Yeah.
Like, something about them feels like they're trying really hard to capture something that they captured so organically in the first movie.
1,000%.
Yeah, they just don't hold up. I would say maybe it's a little funnier, and then 3 is a little more interesting, if that makes sense. Like, 3 has a much more interesting story, and 2 just has a little more laughs. But at the same time, I'm only going off of, like, a couple screenings of each, and neither was enough for me to, like, want to go back. And like, they just make me want to watch this first one again, to be honest with you. And No Men in Black International for me, so I'm very curious.
Yeah.
That's the thing. This movie's so good, I'm still curious about that last one. based on how good this movie is.
I'm not.
I had no interest in seeing that last one. I was like, yeah, I'm not. I'm good.
Okay. This is my moment to get on my soapbox about the sequels. Yes. As a kid, I remember, like, one of my first experiences. This is back in the days of, like, on demand.
back in the days when Webster was young, she was...
Very good. The, like, days of on demand or, like, renting things from your, like, freaking cable box. If you're lucky enough to have a cable box. Anyway, this Men in Black 2, I found just, like, you know, kind of just shooting the shit. And I was like, what the fuck? They made a second one? Because, again, this is also, like, kind of pre-internet. Or pre-me having regular access to the internet. And yes. And I watched it, and I was just like, this is fine. Like, this is good, but it's not the first one. And I remember enjoying it enough. It also has a very young Rosario Dawson in it.
Yeah.
True.
And I thought it was good, but and I watched it a couple times. The third one I didn't even know existed, which it was a surprise to me writing this episode. And then I saw the third, or fourth, technically, fourth Men in Black at Men in Black International at the Fullerton AMC Dine-In Movie Theater. And it was okay. Like, it wasn't... And you touched on this earlier, Flynn, but there's, like, a magic that happened in this first entry that I think is impossible to replicate. And I think the further we get away from 1997, the harder it would be to replicate.
Yeah. They'd be trying too hard.
Yeah, the 2019 one, like, it didn't feel like a Men in Black movie because it's all CGI. None of it was practical. Like, it was, it all felt so mechanical to me, almost. Like, I don't know, it didn't scratch that itch, which I did go in with an open mind wanting it to be good. And because this movie is so near and dear to me, I wanted it to have done well, but it just wasn't. It missed the mark for me. So you're not missing anything, Phil.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. That's all I needed to know, too, Webster. I'm actually not curious anymore.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Well, no, it's good, because actually I think that was another problem I had with the 2012 one, is it was very CGI heavy, like incredibly CGI heavy, and it really took away from the movie. And I also forgot about Rosario Dawson, number two. Actually, I really liked her in that movie. I liked her story in
that.
She
was good.
Yeah.
The villain was Lara Flynn Boyle.
Yes, from Twin Peaks. Okay.
And then... Well, it's Johnny Knoxville is in there.
I forgot that Johnny Knoxville was in this, and I was so caught off guard. But
maybe we should give two another shot. I don't know. I haven't seen that in like 15 years.
Honestly, it's been a long time. I haven't seen two since probably what year did it come out? What did I say?
Like 2002.
2002.
Yeah, I probably haven't seen it since. I definitely was living in the Central Valley, so at least 2004, 2005. Like, I haven't seen it in a while. But okay, let's move it along. I have one fun question for you guys.
All right.
You just saw some weird ass alien shit, and now you've been recruited for the Men in Black. What's your first order of business? What conspiracy are you getting to the bottom of first? And more importantly, which co-host would be your partner?
Oh gosh. All right.
Weird ass alien shit.
If you don't want to pick each co-host and then decide what mystery you'd be getting to the bottom of with that particular co-host.
Okay.
In my estimation here, Webster, you have been actually a member of this organization the entire time. And
I need you to FaceTime me so I can have you look into this red light for me.
Stop doing that.
Hey, Kate, tell me if you ever flashy thing me. No. Have you ever flashy thing me? No.
No. No. Webster, you've been doing it this whole time. And but as I discover some weird alien shits in the realm of comedy, somehow you reveal your secret to me over the mic while we're waiting for Phil, but we don't realize Phil's actually been on here the whole time. So then Phil now is also part of the Men in Black.
Beautiful.
So yes, Agent A, Agent A squared, and then Agent P.
Agent A squared.
No, you're like, for we're going to make an exception, guys. We're going to call him Agent Fwen. Like, don't people know him as Fwen? Like, it's fine.
Isn't that a just wipe his fucking memory. Name? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm Agent Fwen. Oh, what conspiracy are we getting to the bottom of first? That, I'm not 100% sure. You know what? We're going to really see what these crap circles are about, and we are going to go directly to Mel Gibson for this information. That's exactly what we're doing.
For sure.
Even though M. Night Shyamalan wrote the thing,
yeah,
something about Mr. Gibson is giving us a red flag there, and we're all going to do it, but we can't do it effectively because Phil cannot stop talking about how much he loves the Lethal Weapon series. It's really derailing the entire interrogation.
That's perfect.
And we give up. That's nice. How this all goes, turns around. So, yes.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Okay.
All improv, all right, baby. Well, yeah.
All right. For me, I actually thought I witnessed some UFO shit the other night, but it turns out it was that one jack-off guy, Elon Musk, and his face. I was just on my nightly walk, and I was like, what the fuck is that? And I'm texting Savannah like, honey, I think there's a fucking UFO outside. Oh, my God. And then I'm just like, oh, shit, never mind. I think it's a SpaceX shit. Never mind.
It looked freaky, though. I don't blame you.
Yeah. I had, like, a really good view of it, too. I actually pulled my phone out and started recording it. And I was like, oh, my God, it's the end of the world. So the thing that I got recruited because I did see some shit, man. I see this SpaceX shit land on the fucking ground, right? And sure. I run and I follow it, and it takes me to a fucking underground tunnel, dude. And the conspiracy is about these goddamn LA sandworms going underneath the goddamn tunnels. So I think they're sandworms because I'm all jacked up on Dune 2 hype right now. So like, but it's not. It just turns out they're just SpaceX worms. Like they're fucking like it. Like Musk made contact with aliens because he is an alien himself, and he fucking put fucking alien worms underneath LA. So my first order of business is that we're gonna go investigate. Let's see. I'm taking Agent A, as in Anthony Fuentes, since he has a little more LA experience than I do. like 5 years more experience than I do. So I'm taking him.
Go down that street.
Yeah. I was like, fuck, dude. I was like, you lead the way, dude.
Skid Row. It's all homeless people? No, they're all bugs. Yeah. Those are actually wearing
They're all bugs. They're all bugs. And, so we're getting down. We're going to find out what's up with these Elon Musk worms taking over L.A. And the conspiracy is it really for L.A. tunnels? No, they're not for L.A. tunnels, dude. They're for something else. And that's what we're going to find out. And I think there's a script right there, Fwynn. Yeah,
I think so. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. So Agent P, Agent A. And we need some weapons, dude. The Series 4 de-animizer and the Noisy Cricket.
There you go.
Let's bring it in.
Hey, you know who's got those weapons is Agent Webster over there.
Agent Webster, dude. Yeah. Oh, no. Can you imagine? She's like the Zed, man. Like, instead of like...
Oh, yeah. She's the Zed calling the shots.
It's like, look, we're not hosting an intergalactic keg around here, all right, you fucks?
Yes, I like this.
My Webster impression.
Honestly, not far from it. Close enough. At least it wasn't like, oh, I forget. I think it might have been you. It was offensive, so I think it might have been you, Phil. You did a Webster impression, and it was so like, oh my God. And I was just like, I don't sound like that.
I don't remember this. You might have been drunk.
I'm
just going to go with the easy way out. I was drunk. That's usually the go-to.
I think it was when we were at that tiki bar a couple weeks ago. Yes, it was. And you were drunk, so that tracks.
Well, there you go.
Hey.
Oh, is that when me and Fwen just like slammed a few claws like before showing up there?
Yeah, and you fell asleep during Tenet. Yeah.
Oh yes. Oh, you told him, huh, Fwen?
No, Fwen
told him.
No, Fwen didn't. Ruben did.
Ruben did. Ruben, I was too drunk. Nice. I thought you were awake the whole fucking time.
No, I mean, I fell asleep towards the end, and I was like, fuck, dude, I am turned And how am I falling asleep during the war scene of a fucking Tenet? I was like, how is this possible?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Delightful.
Yep. Yep.
For
yep.
me, I think I can see Phil being my partner in crime, but I see Agent Flynn being like the man in the chair, like the tech dork.
Yeah, tech dork.
And mainly because I think Phil, Agent P, would have a preoccupation with trying to physically fight aliens.
Good call.
I think you used the wrong F word right there, Webster. Not fight.
Oh no, probably both. I think you would find the specific kind of aliens who find mm-hmm. fighting to be foreplay mm-hmm. to the fucking.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now you're speaking my language.
Yeah, there you go. All those tentacles? Jeez.
Oh my goodness.
Like, Phil, stop asking them to strap you in, all right?
Yeah. It's the scene where Will Smith is getting tossed around the top of the car by the tentacles. Mm. But it's just, yep. It's Phil. Mm-hmm.
It's Phil. Yeah. He's just like, harder! Harder!
Oh my god, dude. Oh
yes, exactly.
My god.
Yeah, that's what I envision. I do like your guys' theory about me being the Zed type character. That makes mm-hmm. me happy. Mm-hmm. I have fucking paperwork.
It's like, P, give the kid a weapon.
Yeah, exactly. Give the kid a weapon. I say eight youngers than both of you.
Yeah.
Well, man. This has been a delight, guys. Let's wrap this up. Rate this movie out of 5 glasses of sugar water.
Oh man, let's see. Jesus.
I'm giving it, and I know I'm doing this again this week, but it is 5 dead cockroach family members for sure. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this is to me, this is a 5, like, hands down. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't rate it lower.
It's this just is that 5 good. Neuralizers for me. Truly, just for my own enjoyment, I would sooner change my ranking on Kill Bill than I would on this movie.
I'm torn because to me they're both, like you said before, they're both 5s in very different ways.
Yes, and like mm-hmm. which isn't like again like I feel like when it comes to rating these movies, like the goalposts kind of move with each movie of what makes it, you know.
Well, we find mm-hmm. a good one, and then we find a shit one later on. We're like, you know what? Nope.
Yeah. But like I said, Kill Bill, it's a 5 movie, but it's very different. And in terms of like, I guess cinema, it's like better technically than Men in Black. But also, I enjoyed Men in Black overall as an experience more than Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. So it's hard. It's a difficult line to mm-hmm. toe. But I stand by it. I would sooner change my rating on Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 than I would change my rating on this. This is a 5 for me.
Yeah. Delight. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's no question. It's just a 5.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. No complications here. Just
okay.
a 5.
Okay, you shady bitch.
Just a 5. Oh, God, but my Kill Bill volume, oh, God. It's a 5, dude.
I don't see it.
He's not even drunk for this one. Yeah, that's sober 930 Phil right there. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Right? Yeah. Oh, Agent A will remember this.
He just put you on the shittest time.
That's so good. That's so good. So good.
Oh, very cool. Thanks, guys. That is it for this week for Anthony Fuentes' birthday celebration.
Woohoo!
Hey. Next week, what are we talking about, Anthony Fuentes?
We talking about a TV show, one of my favorite TV shows of all time, so I think I may be front-loading this month with too much quality shit, but it's my birthday, so I don't care.
Yeah, do what you want.
We've covered this in some form in the past in a significantly darker episode, so this will be much lighter and much happier.
So excited to talk about this.
Yes, I'm giving you guys each 3 episodes that we got to watch. So, yeah, and they're very short. They're awesome. Like 22 minutes. So, nice. 3 episodes. We'll talk about them. Good shit.
Hell yeah. So excited to talk about it. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Please make sure you are subscribed and write us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It does help other people find the podcast. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in these algorithms. Just help us out for Anthony's birthday. Think of the children. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest of all of our podcasting shenanigans, we are over on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And you can also stay up to date with all of our network shenanigans, which is Horrible People's Network, which is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. I have a second podcast on the network, and so does Anthony Fuentes. So go check those out. You can find Anthony on Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and you can find me on Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. You can find Phil doing some really cool YouTube, like short videos on YouTube, at Phil Acevedo. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it. So until next time, the galaxy is on Orion's belt. Talk to your cats, people.
Yes.
Nice.
See ya. Beautiful. Bye.